Welcome to the Geriatric Journal Club, featuring practical discussions on the front line of PALTC issues that you wrestle with every day. The Geriatric Journal Club is a joint presentation of the Colorado Journal Club and the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. References for this podcast and links to previous recordings can be found at paltc.org/journalclub. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-acute care.
If there are no questions, we're going to move on to Dr. Gom, who's going to kind of pick up where we left off and give us a couple tidbits on antibiotic stewardship.
Yeah, this will be different than most of our journal clubs because this is really, after giving you just a few things here, I want to make this as interactive as we can make it. So I'll start with the three things that I pulled up just sort of odds and ends around antibiotic stewardship. The first one is a letter I got about 6 weeks ago from Schreiber, who is the main group that we use for our lab stuff here. They're in multiple states. And recently their microbiology teams consolidated across states. And this letter came across, the bottom line for the letter is that when they see urine cultures with multiple organisms, they are no longer going to routinely culture those and do sensitivities. In fact, the letter states that what they're going to do is they're going to call the provider and find out if there's really any reason at all to proceed. There may on occasion be a reason if you've got people with abscesses and stones and so forth that are complicated. But under normal conditions, the answer would just be no. This is not something we're going to deal with. So that's the first one. So if you have one of those and you get that phone call, take the phone call and be willing to argue that this really is a UTI and I'm, you know, because it met all the criteria, or it's not, and they shouldn't go further. The second was just a reminder, we've spent, close to 3 years now since the FDA sent the letter out telling us not to use Levaquin for UTIs and URIs and sort of non-specific infections. And I think from, you know, just offhand from the work I do here, I would still guess that almost half of things that people call UTIs, even though most of those are not, but almost half of them are still being given Levaquin, which is just silliness. But beyond that, it's just bad care. And the second thing here is just a reminder that last July, the FDA strengthened that by putting a box warning on fluoroquinolones. It's primarily for the risk of tendonitis, but it also includes the cardiac effects. And again, it's just to stop what you're doing, think about whether or not this really is a bacterial infection, knowing that most of the things that are called UTIs in nursing homes are really asymptomatic bacteriuria. Most of the URIs, most being well over 99% of the URIs that we treat are viral and not bacterial. So these drugs wouldn't be appropriate anyway. That was the second thing. And then one that's more a little more local is I've recently been reviewing data from Omnicare that's more specific to our Vivage facilities. And this is really the part where I say, nice work. We're on the right track, at least in our facilities. And in large part, I think this is people like Travis and lesser extent myself focusing on this and trying to give feedback to our providers month after month after month when they're not on track making appropriate diagnoses or getting rid of antibiotics. So what I have is three different, they're proprietary, so I'm not going to share them, but I'll give you the results. They're just graphs that compare Omnicare as a whole and antibiotic use in all nursing homes with Vivage separated out, and then how do we compare to everybody else that they serve. And overall, on average, about 30% of patients in Omnicare non-Vivage facilities are receiving antibiotics. And in the Vivage facilities, it's gradually gone down month over month for the past 6 months, and we're running at about half that rate at 15%, which is really commendable. They do the same sort of thing with the number of, just to show that this isn't just by accident, the number of new admits receiving antibiotics 6 months ago was essentially even between other facilities, Vivage facilities, and just in the past 2 to 3 months, hopefully as a result of hounding people to try to get results from hospitals when folks show up on antibiotics, we're now running at about 20 versus 25%, so about 5% less than the average that are receiving antibiotics in our facilities. And the final report is antibiotic utilization ratio, the AUR, which is really more of a statistical thing. We don't use it a lot in clinical practice, but it is used in a lot of research, which shows that about other facilities running 175 to 200 total days. And we're running somewhere, initially we were at about 125 and now we're down around 75. So overall about half what the others are. So that's encouraging to me. Now what I want to do, last month you heard Travis and you heard Clay talk about different models for how we could try to improve antibiotic utilization, and whether that's feedback or pre-approval. I mean, there are other options too, but those are the two big ones we discussed. What I want to hear from you guys is what's going to work. It's been, I looked through our CMDA at our annual meeting. We go back, going back 5 years, we've given 4 talks on appropriate diagnosis and treatment of UTIs, and essentially nothing has changed. So I'm just trying to figure out, it is an education. You know, I don't want to be punitive, but we're considering having pre-approval for antibiotics and facilities for those providers that can't get it right at least half the time. So we will start tracking that data in January. And by the end of June, if more than half the antibiotics that you ordered, not that people came in on, but that you as a provider ordered, are inappropriate, as far as at least diagnostically, we may start requiring pre-approval. So I don't know. Throwing it out there for providers. Take your phone off mute and let us know what you think.
First question, Dr. Bennett asked, should we treat CRE in a patient with a chronic bully being treated with no fevers and no leukocytosis?
No. That's easy. That's colonization. If I had to pick on one group, well, two groups, I guess, that we've seen that do this persistently wrong, it would be dentists who don't even stick to their own guidelines, and urologists who dip the urine coming in the door and know the diagnosis before they've met the patient. And almost never is it a UTI, but it is almost always bacteria. And I just tell people, you know, urologists are wonderful people, but primarily they're surgeons. It's our job to figure out the medical side, let them do the surgery and we'll do the medicine. So I've met with 3 different urology groups now, and they're all actually pretty inviting and welcome. They welcome the education. They initially get a little defensive, but when you start talking to them about the data, they back down. And as long as we're watching it, they're pretty nice.
And I'll just add to that that it's a good question, because carbapenem resistance is a really scary part of the antibiotic resistance spectrum. And so I think it makes sense to case by case look at the entire patient, the entire situation, and maybe even do a consult with an infectious disease, because again, this is one of the more frightening and potentially has big impact on our use of antibiotics, because this is one of our last lines of defense for an organism. Dr. Bennett also asked, these patients need to stay in isolation. You know, I've found it depends on who you talk to. So an infection focused person that has been trained in long-term care would probably say yes. But then you get to a point where it's basically draconian and they're always in isolation. So again, I think that's a question answered by, you know, a little more extensive history and then consulting with everybody at the facility, including the medical director, to come up with a plan for that patient. Other questions people have, I have a couple things to add, but if you do have a question, you can type it in to the Zoom chat and then, or ask to be unmuted and I will unmute you for a question. Actually, I can make it so that you could unmute yourself. So a couple things I just wanted to add, kind of summarizing what we have spoken about last month, and that is some areas that providers can focus on and, you know, really practice leaders as well as medical directors, and that is UTIs and first of all, obtaining UAs in the first place. So with a good sort of restrictions around getting a UA in the first place, waiting till specific criteria has been met, that alleviates majority of our problems with over-treating asymptomatic bacteria. In essence, you know, if you're a on-call provider and you get a positive UA, it's very hard to not treat that. So we're just trying to stop that process before it gets to that point and really be more discerning with our obtaining the UA in the first place. And then in terms of, you know, influencing behaviors, and as medical directors out there, I'd really encourage you to look into comparison graphs, having providers compare to each other on a month-by-month basis on the number of antibiotics they used, as well as the number of times we considered it inappropriate. And just putting that data out there has been very effective. And so I will counter Dr. Gom a little bit and say, and I have seen a lot of improvement over the past few months in terms of, you know, focusing on just those two areas, our urines, UAs, and doing the comparison graphs. You know, I think we've seen a real change. And we are, in post-acute care, we are also the stewards for everybody that comes in on antibiotics or who are prescribed an antibiotic by an outside provider. And as unfortunate as that might be for us, because it takes a lot of additional time, it is our job as the overseer of their entire care to challenge specialists when we feel antibiotics are inappropriate. And that can be done cordially and professionally, but I think very few people make that phone call. And I think it's really important that we start doing it more often, especially with dentists and urologists. I agree with that. But even infectious disease doctors with chronic antibiotic use, I think we just need to challenge and then ask for what, say, hey, we have an antibiotic stewardship program in place, and I need to document why this patient is continuing on antibiotics. What should I put? And explain why you're calling, that it's against the evidence. And so if I'm going against the evidence, I need your word, in your words, the specialist's words, what to put. And I think that will put them to the test on, are they willing to stand up against scrutiny regarding the antibiotic use?
The success of your practice depends on a support team that knows exactly how to navigate through the many variables and nuances of post-acute medicine. Based on years of practical clinical experience, the team at U.S. Post Acute Care is dedicated to enabling you to deliver the very best quality of patient care, providing a unique complement of administrative and clinical educational support services. To learn more about what U.S. Post Acute Care can do for your practice, visit uspostacutecare.com.
Couple questions. The role of antibiotic timeouts, Dr. Annenberg.
So
antibiotic timeouts, I'll be honest, I have mixed feelings about it. I do think they help. I do think that there is a place for antibiotic timeouts. I think that practically speaking, you really need a good infection preventionist or somebody assigned to this duty at the facility. So that you can get it done timely. And then I would probably caution with, you know, timeouts and looking at a, you know, case by case scenario so that you're not potentially stopping an antibiotic that, you know, we might determine later is vitally important. I think there's a place for them, but, you know, I do think being thoughtful about how you use them is important. And Dr. Watson wanted to add to that answer. So let me figure out. And then Dr. Feinsod, did you want to comment?
Yes, you know, in terms of education, not only colleague education, but family and patient education, because families will come back at our providers or at the medical director and ask why we are insisting on a certain antibiotic usage, where the consultant recommended a higher dose or longer use of an antibiotic, and you know, the mentality in so many families is you know, more is better, et cetera, and you know, and the consultant said that. So we make a concerted effort to speak to families as well. And one thing I'd like you to comment on is that we have, I continue to struggle with certain providers on dosage, medications such as ciprofloxacin. I constantly see 500 milligrams twice a day and for 10 days, for 2 weeks. And it just really raises the risk of ESBL or other MDROs. So would you comment how, you know, how we can, you know, reach out to our providers in an effective way?
Sure. So, you know, I think, again, getting some initial buy-in from the practice leaders, you know, the asking their providers to pay attention to antibiotic stewardship. And then, you know, with having a stewardship champion and an or infection preventionist provide them with that feedback. And you shouldn't see the same major mistake month over month if they're engaged in participating and there's some, you know, push by their provider, the leaders in their practice.
Baby steps.
Yes.
And unfortunately. For
sure. So Dr. Watson, are you on? I think you wanted to add to the antibiotic timeout.
Actually, the previous... treating CRE in a patient that is essentially colonized.
Sure.
That's okay. I agree they don't need to be treated. And if we think about it, often those are very, very complicated patients, usually with a Foley or they have a stone or they have a nephrostomy tube. And so if you're going to treat those people, the entire issue needs to be addressed. Meaning the stone gone or the nephrostomy tube changed or the Foley changed. And if we do treat with a carbapenem and we treat, but we leave that quote unquote safe harbor piece of plastic in place where the CRE can hang out safely and not get treated by the antibiotic, then we're going to burn the carbapenem. We're going to burn whatever antibiotic we have left. And then we're going to have a completely resistant bug. So we shouldn't treat them because it hurts the patient, but it also creates a more resistant organism that we can't, we potentially can't treat at all, even with things like polymyxin and some of those other antibiotics that we try to not use except in extreme cases. So I would echo what Dr. Gom was saying for both the patient's health and for the public health.
Excellent. Thank you. I had one other quick question, and then we're going to end. Dr. Annenberg was mentioning about how to report this data. There's a lot of information out there. I would just encourage you to email Dr. Gom or myself, and I will share exactly how we've been reporting this, how to normalize the data per 1,000 patient days. Once you get it set up, it's pretty easy to do on a month-by-month basis. But just shoot us an email, and we'll... we have no stake in ownership of this. We'll just give it to you and show you how to report it.
And I have just two real quick closing comments. About 18 months ago, the health department, myself, Telligen, and a community infectious disease doc worked on a document for appropriately diagnosing UTIs. We've been waiting for the right time when we can all get back together again. We're about to do part two of that document, which is treatment recommendations, which is a little bit harder, but how to choose an antibiotic, a dose. Time interval is pretty clear. It's 3 days for UTIs, illness are complicated. And it is just so hard for so many providers that were trained on 14 days for every infection to just even back down to 10 days. But it really is clear-cut wounds. The lobe criteria is really 5 days unless there's a reason not to. At any rate, we're going to start working toward that. And then hopefully we'll try to address URIs next.
We are going to, it's 1 o'clock, so we are going to officially stop. So feel free to jump off if you'd like to. I did get another question that I would like to answer from Amy Moeller. It says, my concern for penalizing prescribers, will you know of the 50 plus phone calls that they were involved in, which they provided education and no UA was obtained? You know, the idea is not to penalize. The idea is to just promote good practices through awareness so that you can see where you are relative to other providers and then through education. And so, you know, we're trying to avoid, you know, the situations where we're going to hold antibiotics until we get more information, but help us out by just getting yourself up on criteria. And then I think one of the areas is just documenting well. Think of antibiotics as a special case. Every time you enter it, spend a couple minutes in the progress notes and put in a brief one paragraph note as to why you're starting it. That in and of itself could save a lot of what we consider to be inappropriate use. Another question, is there a national benchmark for those in SNFs on an antibiotics Q month, or do we have the Omnicare data?
There isn't, other than there's data on appropriate diagnosis. Norihiro Yogo did that here 4 years ago and published data on UTI data showing that 85% of UTIs treated clearly were not UTIs, and another 8 to 9% were questionable. So even if we started there, if we're missing it 85% of the time, back then, and maybe now we're doing a little better, but we're nowhere near where we need to be. We haven't repeated the data, but at least from what I see and what Travis sees, I think 50% would be pretty optimistic right now if we could get it right half the time. Because I still see a lot more things, and it could be documentation. I hear that a lot, but I don't see it. If we could get to 50%, we might be happy for now.
Okay. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in this month, and have a good holiday, and we will see you next month.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care.